Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hello, everybody. And look who's having second thoughts about the way President Bush was elected. The woman who elected him. Remember the Florida recount after the year 2000 presidential election and how the Supreme Court stopped the recount on a 5-4 decision, which hinged on the ultimate swing voter of that era, Justice Sandra Day O'Connor? Well, the other day, Justice O'Connor, now retired, expressed some regrets about the court's role in that election. Many Democrats, and I suspect many Iraqis, are saying, now you tell us. And this change of heart must have come in relatively recent times, because Justice O'Connor was on this program in 2006 and said then that she had no reason to second guess herself at that time. Want to hear the clip? The interview was mostly about other things, but in our last minute and 19 seconds or so, it ended this way as I asked this question. And my other question is, here in my city, despite the Surrender Monkeys New York Post cover, my city, which voted 75% for Al Gore, you will always be remembered by many as the deciding vote to elect President Bush. Can you tell New York for posterity, in layman's terms, why did you vote to deny the state of Florida the right to recount votes in its own state?
Well, Florida had the opportunity to recount votes and did, but it had... The court found that the Florida courts were not correctly applying federal law in the election process there. And after the decision of our court became final, there were three separate recounts of the votes in the counties that were affected by the decision. And those were conducted by members of the media. And in none of those votes would the result have changed. So, indeed, the Florida vote count was as it was, very close indeed, but it went in favor of George Bush.
I guess you never second-guessed yourself on that one.
Well, I don't know that I need to.
Well, now she needs to. Justice O'Connor there on this program in 2006. But the other day she said this to the Chicago Tribune editorial board. This is a quote. And then listen, by the way, as I read this, to how she refers to the court she was on as it. It took the case and decided it at a time when it was still a big election issue. Maybe the court should have said, we're not going to take it. Goodbye. Obviously, the court reached a decision, did reach a decision, and thought it had to reach a decision. I'll read that again. Obviously, the court did reach a decision and thought it had to reach a decision. It turned out the election authorities in Florida hadn't done a real good job there and kind of messed it up, and probably the Supreme Court added to the problem at the end of the day. And she also said it, quote, stirred up the public and, quote, gave the court a less than perfect reputation. And that's one of the lines that's getting the most reaction, that she said it gave the court a less than perfect reputation. So what's up with Sandra Day O'Connor, or Sandra Day Late, as Slate calls her today? Let's talk about it with Adam Liptak, New York Times Supreme Court correspondent. Thanks for coming on, Adam. Welcome back to WNYC.
You bet. Good to be here.
So I guess something happened between 2006 when Justice O'Connor was on the show and last week in Chicago. What do you think it was?
I think a part of it is she's looking at what happened when her successor, Justice Samuel Alito, joined the court and started to vote in ways very different from the way Justice O'Connor had voted in cases involving campaign finance, notably Citizens United, in cases involving abortion, in cases involving the use of the government use of race-conscious admissions decisions. He, of course, was appointed by George Bush. So she knows that her role in Bush v. Gore has a direct line to the decisions that are now being overturned as a consequence of the appointment of Alito for O'Connor.
But that sounds very political. So she could have said she regrets that President Bush appointed Alito to replace her, because he tilted the court further to the right than she would have liked. But if she goes all the way back and says she regrets that the Supreme Court took the Bush v. Gore Florida case, then it's almost like saying, I wish the other guy was elected president, which doesn't sound like a legal constitutional opinion, but maybe a political one if you put it that way.
Well, it's, you know, I hesitate to jump too quickly or embrace the word politics too quickly, because politics has a lot of different meanings and a lot of different levels. And I don't think that any justice of the Supreme Court at least consciously thinks of themselves as political in the partisan sense. But there's other meanings of political, and there are sort of judicial philosophical meanings of political, and she may attach herself to that. But let's take ourselves back to 2000. It was the almost universally held view of legal scholars and sophisticated lawyers that this was a state law issue that the court would not get into, that the court would let play out on the ground, because it largely, almost entirely, involved questions of Florida state law that usually are reserved solely for the Florida state courts and the Florida Supreme Court. So it was a big surprise to everyone that the court jumped in. And, you know, better late than never, I guess O'Connor is coming around to the view that was the general view back then.
I guess. But in the clip we played from 2006, she reminded us briefly there of the reason she voted to stop the recount, that she believed it violated federal law. I think that was the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, the Equal Protection Clause, no less, right? Wasn't it that the votes would be counted or recounted differently in different counties? Therefore, different people's votes would be counted differently, and that violated equal protection?
That was the essential holding, right, that different counties were using different standards.
And as emotional as everybody on all sides was about it at the time, did she have a point? Did legal scholars come to think she and her side might have had a point in a constitutional sense?
Well, the court made it quite clear that its decision was a ticket for one ride only, that it was limited to the circumstances before it, and it did not expect it to have lasting value. It expected it, and this perhaps supports the idea that it was a political decision, that it was only about that particular election. But since then, and most recently in the 2012 election, courts in Ohio have started using that holding in a way that that most liberals would think is a good thing. So it turns out that there are aspects of Bush v. Gore that have an afterlife, and an afterlife that lots of people might think actually makes sense.
Huh. So, listeners, have you been hearing about Sandra Day O'Connor's change of heart on the Supreme Court accepting Bush v. Gore? Have you been talking about this with your friends and neighbors and relatives and disgruntled fellow ideologues on any point on the political spectrum? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. If you want to react to this, we're talking about it with Adam Liptak, Supreme Court correspondent for the New York Times. And reading her words carefully, Adam, which I guess you should always do with a present or former Supreme Court justice, read the actual words very carefully. She does not say the case was wrongly decided.
That's right.
She simply says that maybe the court should not have taken it at all and left it to the Florida courts to decide. And I think that's an important distinction. Do you?
And another point that jumps out at you a lot and that the justices care about but seldom say overtly is that they care about the reputation of the court. They really hate to do things that do damage to the prestige and authority of the court, because the court, of course, has no particular way to compel people to follow its decisions. It doesn't have an army. It doesn't have the power of the purse. It has its legitimacy. And she acknowledges quite frankly here that one reason not to have decided the case, whether the decision was right or wrong, is because it did significant damage to the reputation of the U.S. Supreme Court.
And she, if I remember correctly, defended Justice Roberts when he voted to uphold most of Obamacare. He had gotten criticized by a lot of people on the right for being more concerned about the court's reputation than the Constitution as they saw it. And she rushed to her defense. And I think some people at that time read into it that, yeah, here's somebody who's very concerned about the court's reputation, Sandra Day O'Connor, which is one of the reasons that maybe she defended Roberts' decision. And here's further evidence of that.
That's exactly right. She has a new book out, not a very good book, called Out of Order, but the music of the book is what a grand apolitical institution it is, how trustworthy it is, how wonderful it is, and she basks, and all the justices bask in the aura of the prestige of the Supreme Court, and none of them like to see that damaged because it is, you know, collectively they want to have people respect their institution.
Let's take a phone call. Stuart in Bloomfield, you're on WNYC. Hi, Stuart.
Hi, good morning.
What are you thinking?
I'm thinking that that whole decision was the reason why I don't call myself a Democrat anymore. I call myself a liberal, independent liberal, and that's the way I vote. I don't vote in the primaries. I just I vote in local elections, and I tend to vote Democrat. I never vote Republican ever since.
But I don't understand if the reason Democrats were unhappy at the time is that they thought that an election was stolen by the Supreme Court from a Democratic candidate, Al Gore, who had won the popular vote, Then why does that turn you off from being a Democrat?
Because they didn't fight it. They refused to fight it.
After they fought it all the way to the Supreme Court, how more could they have fought it?
There must be an appeal process. I mean, this isn't the first time that the Supreme Court has. I mean, I'm not really well versed in Supreme Court history, but there must be an appeal process.
Well, that's the end of the appeals process in the legal sense. And actually, on that point, Adam, Al Gore did release a statement yesterday. Maybe you saw it. And he basically reaffirmed kind of the opposite of what Stuart is saying, that once the legal process was exhausted, that is, the Supreme Court made its decision ending the election recount, then he decided at that point that the rule of law and respect for the legal system as the ultimate authority was so important to the future of the United States that he was not going to protest it in any other way. He was not going to lead demonstrations. He was not going to go on media shows and say, oh, my God, I can't believe it. I've been robbed. Instead, he went right out and said, George W. Bush is the duly elected president of the United States. I thought that was one of the most amazing moments, actually, that I've been witness to, you know, doing this job, that he stood up for the legal process, as imperfect as he thought it was, so as not to risk the possibility of degrading the nonviolent transitions of power that we have in this country. But did you see Gore's statement yesterday?
I did, and he said this all along, and I agree with you, Brian, that he is a complete class act. He says he disagrees strongly with the decision, but that he respects the role of the Supreme Court as the final decision maker from which there's no appeal in the American system. That what part of the genius of our system and the reason we've lasted for more than 200 years is the peaceful transition of power from party to party. And, you know, Al Gore is not without bitterness. He has a fine sense of humor about it. I've heard him say that, you know, you win some, you lose some, and then there's this funny in-between state. But nonetheless, the statements he put out and the way that he acted are deeply worthy of respect.
And actually, Linda in Princeton wants to take the same tack as Stuart, that Gore should have continued fighting. Linda, do I have that right? And once the Supreme Court decided, what more could he have done if the question was whether or not he would become president?
Hello, Brian.
Hi, Linda.
Hi. Good morning. And by the way, I appreciate your acknowledging the effect that election had on Iraqis, also Afghanis, I assume,
yes,
to a certain extent.
Although I imagine Gore might have gone to war in Afghanistan anyway.
It's hard to know what was going on, what happened, why it happened, et cetera. But I don't think it was either Mr. Gore or, in the case of the 2004 election, Mr. Kerry in the state of Ohio, the same issue arose. What business is it of theirs to decide whether to stop fighting? I, for one, tried to mobilize large numbers of Democrats to fight Gore on that point. Who was he?
But to do what, precisely, once the Supreme Court made its decision?
I mean, to go down to Florida in the millions and if, whatever you want to call it, occupy, protest, make it a huge media event, and perhaps persuade Mr. Gore to change his view of the situation.
But the Supreme Court had just prohibited Florida from continuing a presidential election recount.
Doesn't matter to me.
So to what effect? Just to make a statement, not to try to overturn the outcome?
I don't know what millions of people might have been able to do, Brian, because it wasn't tried. And it's perhaps possible that the Florida courts could have done some sort of further attempt.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There are new laws being written all the time. I don't know what might have resulted.
That's pretty interesting. Linda, thank you. And Adam Liptak, it's a hypothetical, but is this something that you've discussed in legal circles? Could the Florida legislature, I guess, or whoever it would have been, or maybe the litigators, have taken a different tack toward the recount? Maybe that would have been Gore's lawyers, taken a different tack toward the recount and ran it up the chain again toward the Supreme Court?
No, this decision was final. It was based on the U.S. Constitution, which is supreme over anything the Florida courts can do. Once the Supreme Court has issued its decision, there are no legal routes left, and Gore was correct to say that. It's really interesting to hear, you know, two listeners in a row essentially say that they were prepared to do extra legal things to overturn a deeply upsetting decision.
Well,
and in many nations, you know, people do take to the streets, and wars break out and coups break out. And, you know, that's not the road we've taken.
Right.
And I
mean,
in fairness, most people would think it's not the road we should take.
In fairness to Linda, she didn't say extra legal meaning illegal, right? She said go and protest and see what could have been brought in.
But short of identifying what that option is, you know, I don't know. Given that the legal means were exhausted, I don't know how else to characterize it.
I also want to recall from the clip that we played that Justice O'Connor used as a defense in that 2006 interview here that the media recounts, I'll repeat, because the media then did, I think the AP did a major one and maybe another news organization or two, went in and tried to do the recounts that the Supreme Court stopped. And they seemed to find that Bush would have been elected anyway if those recounts were allowed to go ahead by a hair. And I think some people have analyses that disagree with the AP one. Did you ever look at those and form an opinion?
We were part of a consortium
that
came to that same conclusion that you have to make assumptions along the way, but making the conventional usual assumptions, Bush was slightly ahead at the end. Or put another way, it was a coin toss, and someone had to call it. I don't know whether the Supreme Court was the right institution to call it. I think there's a lot to be said for Justice O'Connor's very late in the day realization that maybe the court should have taken itself out of the equation. But someone had to call it, and it did, and then it was over.
We're talking about former Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor's new regrets, just stated to the Chicago Tribune editorial board the other day, about the court taking the Bush v. Gore 2000 Florida recount case. And Lisa in Forest Hills, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Brian. Thank you so much for taking my call. I really love your show.
Thank you.
I worry that as she's a woman, the waffling or second guessing, could it possibly, you know, while I admire, and I'm sure everyone does admire her honesty, does it taint the views of potential appointments as, you know, well, this female justice, you know, second-guessed the decision, even though a male might have done the same thing, he might not have done it as publicly?
I think it shows character to be able to change your mind on something and say it publicly when you're in political or you know, quasi-political on the Supreme Court life. So maybe it'll help more be appointed. But I don't know. This women change their minds thing, so maybe they're not reliably ideological justices. Or you see anything there, Adam? And maybe I should throw in, have any of the other Supreme Court justices who were there in 2000, the men, change their minds?
So on the first point, I don't see it. I haven't heard it, this notion that that O'Connor, who's so widely admired and who, let's be clear, in general, is not a reflective person, is not quick to express regrets, and is quite decisive. I don't think that hurts the chances of any future woman. And the current women on the court, Ginsburg, Kagan, and Sotomayor, are all of them very decisive. So I wouldn't worry about that. As for the other justices, the justice who most often expresses a view on this is Justice Antonin Scalia. And his line is, get over it. It's done. Move on. Now, you can read a lot into that, you know, that suggests there's something to get over. And it was reported by Jeff Toobin that Justice Souter, who resigned a few years ago, took the decision awfully hard, and it contributed to his decision to leave the Supreme Court.
And I wonder who will get more respect in the annals of history, somebody like O'Connor, who's got ambivalence, who sees shades of gray, who goes a little bit this way, a little bit that way, depending on the circumstances, or Scalia, who is absolutely certain he's right about everything all the time and never changes his mind.
Well, your question suggests its own answer. It probably depends a little bit on what your politics are and what your likes and dislikes about personality types are. But there's a lot to be said for someone who's, shall we say, judicious.
I guess. One more memory from the way that election ended in Florida. I remember being amazed that the recount was argued on the narrow grounds that it seemed to me that it was. Because I think if there's a case to be made that Gore really did win the election in Florida, it was mostly on all those butterfly ballots in Palm Beach County where thousands, maybe tens of thousands of people mistakenly voted for Pat Buchanan, meaning to vote for Al Gore because of the layout of the ballot.
Right.
And so if those ballots were called into question, then Gore probably would have probably really did win Florida by, you know, a fairly comfortable margin among people who actually went to the polls and intended and voted for the candidate who they intended to vote for. But that never became part of the case.
If you just look at those ballots, or if you just look at improperly counted overseas ballots, which heavily favored Bush, then it does seem to put Gore over the line. The criticism that a lot of people have of the Gore legal team is they cherry-picked the counties they wanted recounts in. They didn't push for a recount of the entire state, but only those places that they thought they would harvest the most votes.
And wasn't that the basis on which the Supreme Court threw it out?
Well, that was, in essence, the basis. That's right, that if different places are counting it differently, which means that had the Gore campaign, this is a lot of woulda, coulda, shoulda, challenged in the entire state, and persuaded the Florida Supreme Court to impose a uniform standard on the entire state, you might have a different count result, and you certainly have a different form of argument in the U.S. Supreme Court if it gets there on those facts.
Adam Liptak covers the Supreme Court for the New York Times. We should have you back soon and talk about the cases that are before the court this year.
It's a big term.
It is. A lot coming up, which we'll get back to. But second thoughts about Bush versus Gore from Sandra Day O'Connor, making news this week. Adam, thanks for talking about it with us.
Good to be here. Take care.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, President Obama versus the courts on the Plan B morning after contraceptive pill, and what age should the minimum be, if any, for buying it over the counter. Stay with us.